This is the Quality News Network. The House Appropriations Committee today began debate and voted on party lines for the $124 billion emergency spending bill to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The bill also calls for a timetable for U.S. troops to leave Iraq. It now goes to the full House of Representatives. The House legislation sets the date for U.S. troops to start to leave Iraq by March 1, 2008, but no later than August 31st of that year. However, the Senate measure, which has the troop pullout date by March 31st, has not received enough votes to go forward. The Democrats needed 60 votes to approve the phased withdrawal resolution. The suspected number three Al-Qaeda official, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, allegedly confessed that he planned some 30 terror attacks, including September 11th. He also reportedly confessed to beheading Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. Mohammed is being held at the U.S. Naval Prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. One of Iraq's two vice presidents met with President Bush today at the White House. The Iraqi leader had recently been the target of an assassination attempt. A new report from the Pentagon describes some of the situation in Iraq as fitting the definition of a civil war. However, the term, quote, does not adequately capture the complexity of the conflict. Around security checkpoints in Baghdad today, 10 people were killed by suicide car bombers. Dozens were wounded. The U.S. military said in eastern Baghdad, 4 U.S. soldiers were killed today by 2 roadside bombs. 2 other soldiers were wounded. The Senate Judiciary Committee will allow subpoenas in the probe involving the recent firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. 5 Justice Department officials will be subpoenaed, as well as 6 of the 8 fired U.S. lawyers. As the rival factions Hamas and Fatah formed a new unity government, Israel responded today that it would not deal with the new government. At the United Nations, the 5 permanent Security Council members, along with Germany, have agreed on a new package of sanctions against Iran for its failure to halt its nuclear program. It will be presented to the rest of the Security Council members with a possible vote next week. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed the bill that moves up the state's primary to February 5th from June. As many as 19 other states are considering moving up their presidential primaries to February. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
A Columbia University report finds that binge drinking and pill abuse is becoming more extreme on college campuses. A new government report indicates that worldwide this winter was the warmest on record. It finds that from December through February, the combined land and ocean temperatures were 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit above average for that time period. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan warned today that the increasing number of subprime mortgage defaults could affect other economic sectors. In February, the Labor Department reported that wholesale-level inflation went up by 1.3%. In a separate report, the Labor Department stated that for the second week in a row, the number of unemployment claims went down. They dropped by 12,000 to 318,000. OPEC ministers met in Vienna today and decided to keep oil production steady at the current levels. And the world's most expensive pizza is available at a New York restaurant for $1,000 or about $125 a slice. The 12-inch luxury pizza has 6 types of caviar and fresh lobster. Light sweet crude is trading at $57.55 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 26 points at 12,159, NASDAQ up 7, S&P 500 up 5. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
can change. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I don't know about you, but I just love little kicker stories like the one we just got on the Quality News Network about the world's most expensive pizza. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thursday. For all intents and purposes, it's my Friday because, as a reminder, we won't have a show tomorrow evening because I've got to turn in all the internet stuff because no sense in paying for internet in a place that building a house that doesn't have any people in it, is there? But at any rate, I heard the $1,200 pizza, and I was thinking to myself before she got to it, I said, this thing's got to be loaded with caviar. And lo and behold, it was. And every time I hear a story like that, I can't help but think of that wonderful scene with Tom Hanks from movie Big, where he goes to the grown-up cocktail party and tries the caviar and stands there mugging to the camera, sticking his tongue out, going, yeah, 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 trying to get the taste off his tongue. Because that's, I'll try just about anything. The caviar, I guess I'm still just a beans and cornbread redneck when you get right down to it. So, you know what? $1,200 pizzas, I'm glad they're there. I really, really am. Because at least then the people that Bush gave the tax cut to can put some money back into the economy. But what do you want to bet? You order one of these things. What do you want to bet the people that order one of these things are lousy tippers? Oh, I guess I'm just being cranky. I'm sorry. Welcome to the program. Glad you're along for the ride this evening. I'm tickled to death to be with you. And I hope we'll have ourselves some fun tonight. Well, we're going to talk about some fairly serious stuff. This ain't Howard Stern. We talk about life. And we'll talk about facts. You know, we're part of the reality-based community. And toward that end, at the beginning of the third hour this evening, we will be talking to Rick Ufford Chase. And Rick is a leader in the Christian Peace Witness for Iraq movement. And come tomorrow, 3,500 Christian leaders from... Now, we're talking about real Christians, okay? We're not talking about Dobson and the Southern Baptists. 3,500 Christian leaders from 48 states are going to protest the Iraq war at the National Cathedral, and they expect massive arrests also in protests at the White House. Rick Ufford Chase is convener of Christian Peace Witness for Iraq's Syrian Committee. He served in the Presbyterian Church as the moderator of the 216th General Assembly, the church's highest elected office from 2004 to 2006. And he serves as executive director for Presbyterian Peace Fellowship. And he's got a resume about as long as your arm. He is committed to ending the war. Because, for somebody who takes it seriously, when you get down and dirty, you really can't find anywhere that the Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, would be prone to go out and say, yeah, let's bomb some more, George! So that's coming up at the beginning of the third hour. And, of course, by the time we get back together on Monday, the program will be happening from the confines of our studio and remote undisclosed location in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West Virginia, and I can't wait to get home. It's been some brutal business down here. So that's what we're looking at this evening. But no, the place to start, I think, of course, it goes without saying that your phone calls are always welcome on any topic you care to bring to the table, because, among other things, I'm sharp enough to be able to shift gears. We can be talking about one thing, and I can turn around and talk about something completely different like that, because I'm just that sharp. I'm also an egomaniac! No, I'm kidding. But I couldn't help noticing something today, and our good friend Luke in Knoxville apparently was thinking along the same lines I was. The business with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, or KSM as he's referred to in the transcripts. KSM has apparently confessed to everything. And as our buddy Luke in Knoxville noted, he's apparently also confessed to having killed Cock Robin and being the second gunman on the grassy knoll. Look, it's not my fault. It's not my fault I've been turned in. You don't walk out in the world going, geez, I think I'll be a cynic today. No, you are. Cynics are made, not born. And since we do know that we are living under the regime of a torture administration that believes that torture is a valid tool for the creation, I wouldn't say obtained, the creation of information, then how can you look at a story like this and think, yeah, okay, turn the rack another notch there, Fred. Ooh, I did 9/11 all by myself with my little hatchet. Ooh. Turn it again. And I also did, I did the USS Cole. One more notch. I did the embassy bombings in Africa. So I can't help but wonder. I'm told that my connection sucks. So we will take a break and try to fix it and come back. That was a fun little intro. Pity we lost it. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, the Horn, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Heading out to San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend show. I got my hush puppies on. I guess I never was meant for glitter rock and roll. And honey, I didn't know that I'd be missing you so. Come Monday, it'll be alright. Come Monday, I'll be holding you tight. I spent four lonely days in a brown early haze, and I just want you back by my side.
You know, sometimes you have to grow up a little bit to really understand what a song means. And that one has a special resonance for me right now. Come Monday, I will be back in the warm and loving bosom of my family. And I can't tell you how much I want to be there. But enough maudlin stuff. I don't want to get all weepy this early on the program, or I won't make it all the way through the third hour. But I've just got this mental image of, you know, Agent Fred and Agent Tony sitting there with a plate of egg salad and chicken salad and ham salad sandwiches. They're torturing a Muslim, after all. They got to have some ham salad. A cup of stale coffee, you know, mouthful of food. Turn the wheel another notch there, Tone. Let's see what we get this time. You know, sort of, at this point in time, it turns into sort of it's like a really, really sadistic gumball machine at the grocery store for five-year-olds who never grew up. And turn the wheel again. Woo! Ooh, 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 I killed John Kennedy. Ooh, ooh, yeah, ooh, ooh, ah, ah. I'll give it another turn. We're going back in time now. Ooh, Lindbergh, baby! Lindbergh, baby! I stole the Lindbergh, baby! Oh, stop! Yeah, I make fun, but it's not really making fun. I'm trying to point out the ridiculousness of torture. Do we... At this point in time, see, and I'm going right to the phones. I promise. But at this point in time, why in the hell is this story coming out? It's not even Friday. The crackhead Washington White House press corps hasn't even got started on their martinis and heroin yet. Why is this story coming out? Oh, wait, I know. The guy who said that civil liberties and proscriptions on torture were quaint, and the Geneva Convention was quaint. Need some cushion. That's right. Because we all do remember that Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez said that the Geneva Conventions against torture were quaint. And he said in his official capacity that anything that did not cause organ failure or death ain't torture. So to that end, we needed to be reminded, us simple-minded sheeple of the American once was a republic, we need to be reminded that Alberto Gonzalez is valuable and that he is a brilliant thinker. And he's got a legal mind like a steel trap. And that only because he was able to declare that torture was a good thing and that the Geneva Conventions were quaint, only because of that could we find out that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, with no help whatsoever, all by himself with his little hatchet, did the first World Trade Center bombing, the second World Trade Center bombing, the embassy bombing in Africa, the bombing of the USS Cole, and killed Cock Robin. Because we needed to be reminded, oh, yes, you did, I did, we all did, all us squishy liberals, us idiot liberals, we needed to be reminded. Alberto Gonzalez is our solace and our salvation. The only sense I can make out of it. How about you? We go to the phones. Bob is calling from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hey, Bob, you there?
I'm right here.
Yeah, well, you're not, when you kicked this thing off, you were flying high, and then you came in with that dime store stuff, and you were talking about a couple of rocking horses and Agent Fred, and what was the other guy's name?
Oh, Agent Tony.
Tony and Fred. But I was thinking about George and what's his name, Alberto.
Yeah,
you know,
Alberto
sitting across the room. In their whatever, okay, in their PJs, sitting under little rocking horses, back and forth, like two little brats, and in the background there's Unca Dick, telling them what they should do tomorrow, and they're sitting there on their little rocking horses and their little wooden rocking horses. In the Oval Office, rocking back and forth, I had this image in my mind of those two little puppets being directed on what they should do tomorrow. And here you got Georgie, and you got Alberto. You got the little little rocking horse boys listening to Uncle Dick tell him what they're supposed to do tomorrow. But see, Uncle Dick, I'll call him Uncle Dick because he's working for Uncle. He's working for Uncle Sam, and he's supposed to be working for the people of America. He's supposed to be working for the people of the United States of America because that's what his charge is. He's supposed to be the Vice President of the United States. But he's acting as if he is the comptroller of some bizarre little world. And I can see, Georgie Porgy sitting on his little pony, and Alberto, the wannabe, he wants to be just like Georgie. And they're two little boys.
I love the image, sitting on the floor, playing around, attaching battery cables to hamsters, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they're doing evil little things, and Uncle Dick saying, oh, yeah, keep doing that, do that more, because, you see, Uncle Dick is not the guy that's doing it. He's just kind of pulling the strings. But if you stop and think about what Halliburton and all these other, you know, mega corporations have done to this planet. And, you know, I listened to John's, you know, rerun tonight, and I just wanted to reach out to him and say, you know, John Fox is a green person. He believes in a green planet with a living atmosphere and with living sentient beings that care about their living space. And I was thinking about him today, and I thought, it's time that we get green and mean. We got to get mean, Bob. And I'm trying to give a shout out to my friend down there in Australia and say, you know, Australia is getting brown and it's going down, and so is the United States. We're going down. We're burning up everything that's worthwhile, and we're not putting a thing back. They blame it on India and China, blame it on the United States, the UK, and Australia, and all the other, all these, you know, these energy sucks people, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they just suck up the energy and blame everybody else for their problem. Well, our problem, people, is that we're not green and mean, and we need to get that way. Get green, be mean, and be mean about being green. I mean, just get mean about it. I mean, like the Republicans, they're so filthy mean that they're filthy mean about it, Bob. They're filthy mean about their Jesus. And, you know, I'm going back to Wednesday night prayer meeting here. They're filthy mean about their conception of God. They're always mean. They're not even nice about it. They're filthy mean about it. And it's time that the green people, the people that believe that Mother Earth and everything else, life itself is precious, get mean about life. Save the planet, save yourself, save your progeny, save your children, they'll think of you. You know, if you are a green warrior, and you are a warrior, and you fight to keep this planet green, then you are those people that the future will speak of. The ones, these filthy little brown Republicans, these little boys playing on the floor, hooking up these cables to these poor little cockroaches to see if they can make them go boom by applying electricity to them. They will be thought of as the filthy little things that they are, the little demons, the wogs, those trolls under the bridge. What was that one? Oh, God, I remember when I was a child, there was a thing about a troll under a bridge.
Billy Goat's Gruff.
Billy Goat Gruff. There you go. That's the one. Billy Goat Gruff. See, that troll under the bridge is Dick Cheney. And the little, you know, little wogs going across the bridge, you know, it's just that way. We are controlled by a corporate America, and a corporate America is a fascist America, Bob. And we live in a fascist nation. We do not live in a democracy. We do not live in a democratic republic. We live in a fascist America. We live in the same thing that Hitler dreamed of when he was trying to put together the Third Reich that would live a 1,000-year Reich. And these people, these Nazis, these George Bushes and these Dick Cheneys and these Alberto Gonzalez's are the same people that we fought in 1946.
And thought we defeated.
We thought we defeated them, but I heard a song on Mike Malloy. It says, you know, it was just one of them, you know, things about the Nazis, you know, until every Nazi's dead or
oh, yeah,
Nazi's
yeah, I know
gone.
The song.
You know, that song. And
I think,
you know,
that's Chumbawamba.
Still
yeah.
Here. They never were dead. We brought them into this country. We brought them over here.
Well, what was it, 1944, when Henry Wallace, who was then Vice President of the United States, or had been Vice President of the United States, said fascism will come to America wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross.
Absolutely, and that's what it's done. It's done it. It's done it, Bob. It's wrapped in a flag. It's wrapped in the red, white, and blue. And you know what? I cannot, to this day, I can't fly Old Glory anymore because it's been dropped to the ground and defecated on by the George W.
You remind me. There's a chore I have to do before I leave here. That I must remember to do. My father flew the flag regularly, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And he has one that is tattered and torn.
Mm-hmm.
And it is tucked away in a loving and reverent manner. And I know what my father had intended for that flag.
Mm-hmm.
He had proper disposal intended for that flag.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew that if he gave it that proper disposal down here, that some punk ass right wing thug would probably firebomb his house. So I have to remember to take that flag home for burning, Bob.
Good, good. And do what you're saying, Bob, do this. When you do that for your father, have your son by your side. And
we'll all be there. We will all be there.
And then as it goes off to glory, you salute it as you saluted him for me. And I asked Agnes, she said, yes, he did. And I said, thank you. You did. You gave me one moment in time. Just, I never met the man, but God knows I will salute him in person if God exists. But I will not embrace that this administration, this filthy, filthy Republican administration that has done so much damage to the nation that I love and that I fought for and that I lost so many friends for. I will never, never embrace the George W. Bush Republican Christ-hating, disrespecting, filthy, filthy administration. I will not. They're not American. They're un-American. They are not Americans, Bob. They are something else. They're corporatists. They're internationalists. They're something else. They have something else in mind. They're trying to destroy the nation that I love and the nation that your father fought and died for, because he did die for this nation. He didn't just die. He died for this nation many, many times, but he died when he watched his friends go down in World War II. He died then, because I know, because I died when my friends died. Each time I lost one, Bob, my heart was ripped from my chest and a piece of me went with them, and I swear, if I have any strength at all, I will die as they did, with courage and with conviction. And I will not go into that dark night gently. I will go rage, and I will rage against the George Bush administration, and I will rage against the darkness that they have brought upon my beloved United States of America, and the filth that they have done to my Constitution, the Constitution of the people, by the people, and for the people, shall not perish from this earth. I'm sorry, Bob, but I'm going to go now.
No, that's okay. Okay, Bob. I appreciate it.
I love you, and I love your family, because you have that in you. You do have in you what I have in me, and it is not gentle. It's got to get green, and it's got to get mean, and it's got to just stand up and kick some butt. And them Dems up there in the Congress, and them Dems in the Senate, and the Congress of the United States better stand up and get a backbone, Bob. Because if they don't, we're going to kick their backsides square Congress and out of that Senate. We, the people of the United States, must rise up and take back our country.
And it's find somebody that wants theirs. To do the job.
It's ours. It's ours. It's not theirs. Thank you, Bob, for the time. And
no trouble at all.
This earth, rise up and stand against this fascist, this filthy, filthy corporatist regimes across the world. Please, please, for your sakes, your children, and our sakes, and we love you too. We love the English. We love the Brits. We love the French. We love the Germans. We care about the Russians and the Afghanis. And we care about the Iranians. We do. They have love in their hearts for their children. And the Iraqis, our hearts bleed for you. We hurt for every child that has been murdered in our name. We suffer. When I see those broken bodies paraded across the internet, which will never be shown on American,
Bob, I hate to cut you off. We got to roll, man.
Okay.
I know exactly what you mean.
Hey, we'll talk
take
again.
Care. Hey, we will.
Take care. Great weekend.
Will do.
Enjoy. And hey, love the family, okay?
Thanks.
Bye.
Will do. You know, that's one of the things that just makes you... You listen to right-wing radio, and they so blithely and glibly suggest that liberals and progressives hate America. No, we love America. We love America. And we suffer to see what our country has become. And it aches like a raw and open wound. We'll be back with more of your phone calls at 877-443-2366. Light them up. Last chance for a few days, at least on this program. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. In a cloud, it's gathering all time. From the dark, he watches her moving in and out of the bobbing crowd. If she even notices, she gives no sign. And she's laughing, laughing into 1939.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
That's the Big Dipper over there.
Yellow and blue make green.
Well, a cow pie really isn't a pie.
Come on, Beth, open your eyes!
Remember, you're always teaching. Teach carefully. React with rage, and kids will learn it's okay to do the same. Keep your cool, and kids will do likewise. For advice, visit actagainstviolence.org. Brought to you by MetLife Foundation, National Association for the Education of Young Children, and the Ad Council.
Today, all Americans are feeling the pinch of high energy prices. And this winter, the cost of heating your home could account for nearly half of your energy bill. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman, with steps you can take to save money and make your home more energy efficient. First, give your home furnace or heat pump a checkup to ensure it's running as efficiently as possible. Proper insulation in attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, and exterior and basement walls can save 30% on your home energy bill. And insulate the heating ducts, even in unheated areas of your house. Finally, installing a programmable thermostat will ensure you don't pay for energy you aren't using. Program the thermostat down to 65 degrees for 8 hours a day to reduce your heating bill by up to 10%. You have the power to make a difference. You can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more energy efficiency tips, please visit our website at www.doe.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Minutes before the hour, it was Thursdays are special around here because Thursdays are rib day at Dick Howell's Pit Barbecue in North Florence, Alabama. A little cinder block shack with a smokehouse attached, and Lord, And I made a special point because I'd missed it the last couple of weeks, and I didn't want to get out of here without having them because they're fantastic. So I happened to hear a little bit of that life support system for a haircut, Hannity, as I was going up the road, and I heard him actually say to another human being, well, it was a caller to Hannity show, so that's subject to question. But I heard him say to a caller, you know, we didn't start this war in Iraq. We didn't ask for this. We don't want this, but we can't quit now. And I just got, you know, I told you last night that I was put the car in the shop for some much needed repairs, and I'd just gotten it back, and I was boom, right now. I mean, you know, this is the kind of stuff that'll run you off the road. We didn't start this war in Iraq. And it wasn't followed with a laugh track. And, of course, because unlike us, they screen and they only get their point of view through, there was no one there to say, did you really say that, you fool? Your boss, the man that you're an utter lick spittle for, George Bush, started the war in Iraq the second time around. But, you know, let's go to the phones. Susan is with us, calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How's it
going? First of all, I'd like to address something Bob in, was it North Dakota or South Dakota? If I can never
North remember. Dakota. Yeah, go ahead.
Said, my husband and I, he served in both World War II and Korea. He got to the point where he could no longer fly our flight either. So we got to looking around, and we found a substitute. At first glance, it looks like a regular flag. It's got the right number of stripes and the right number of stars. Until you look closer, and then you realize those stars are arranged in a peace symbol.
Yeah.
He can get it on the internet. He might want to consider that.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea at all. There's a blogger down here who blogs at MySpace. His blog is called South of Strange, and he obtained a couple of flags for me not too long back, just because it was an opportunity to remember my heritage. So when we come home, we will decorate the studios with the flags, not the current ones, but the oldie ones, the Pringle, the flag of Scotland.
Ah.
And the Welsh dragon.
Oh, goody.
Yeah, I couldn't resist.
Oh, heavens, no.
By the way, if you get a chance to go by there and read his stuff, he's a fabulous writer. He's a vet. And just darn good. South of Strange at MySpace.
I will. I've got a page on MySpace, so I'll go over there. The reason I called in is two things. First of all, the gentleman who is busily confessing. You mean he hasn't confessed to killing Lincoln yet?
Well, they haven't got the machine cranked that far back yet.
Confessed.
You know, his thumbs are only out of their sockets right now. When they get to the point that the shoulders come out, then you'll get Lincoln. You may get the shooting of Garfield, probably McKinley, and the failed attempt on Teddy Roosevelt.
Not to mention the killing of Julius Caesar. I got to tell you, Alberto Gonzalez is going to go down in history and be compared with another figure by the name of Torquemada.
Well, there's that, and there's John Mitchell.
Yeah.
I've already heard that one, that this is the most out-of-control Justice Department since John Mitchell ran it for Nixon.
Yeah, and I saw a thing on television with, they were going on, it was Oberman, and they had this film clip of this little shrimp, Gonzalez, being greeted by the president and going up and giving them this embrace. Every time I see Gonzalez and the president together, I have one thought pop into my head. Who's on top?
That's just gross.
Well, he's got no legal brain, no qualification. If he were a woman, it would be automatic. She slept her way in. Why not a guy? In this administration, yeah.
Well, it was a pretty meteoric rise. He went from, counselor to the governor of Texas,
mm-hmm.
to secretary of state of Texas, to Supreme Court Justice of Texas, to counselor to the president. Well, he was, I think he, I mean, he was like counsel to the president's, or to his, to George's 2000 campaign. Then he was White House counsel. Then he was elevated to Department of Justice. And, you know, there are those who still say that he is, or had he not crapped in his nest this time through, that he was fast-tracked for the next opening on the Supreme Court.
And as far as, from what I've been able to find out, he's a legal idiot. The man is a complete legal idiot.
Then that means he is on the fast track for the Supreme Court. That's the job requirement number one for a Bush nomination. I mean, look at Sam Alito, who believes that cops have the right to use deadly force against unarmed under legal age black males 18 feet away from him, running away.
Right.
You know, he sanctioned shooting those guys in the head.
I still think Gonzalez slipped his way to the top. And he started with the top dude. I think he's sleeping with Bush.
You know, my eyes are burning.
I know it grossed me out too. To tell you the honest.
I don't. You know, from last night. See, all this stuff carries over in my mind, Susan. And I've got this picture of George and Alberto at a purity ball.
Oh Lord!
See what I mean? See what you do?
Oh, the image.
Too much information. Warning, Will Robinson. Hey, Susan, thanks so much, dear.
More than welcome. You have a nice trip home.
I'm going to try. We'll talk to you Monday.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And first-time caller, Marcus, calling from California.
Hey.
Welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I would like to address, like, the First Amendment in video games.
Okay.
There's a very strange thing going on where there's actually a video game constructed around the Columbine Massacre.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah, it's gross, but where
is it out?
Where do you actually draw the line from the First Amendment to being artistic?
Well, artistic expression is expressly covered under the First Amendment.
Right.
The Supreme Court has routinely punted on this issue. I think it was Potter Stewart who gave the best statement. It's still cited to this day. That he said, "I don't know what obscenity is, but I know it when I see it." And so they crafted this standard of artistic expression is something, you verge into obscenity from artistic when all you do is appeal to the prurient interest of others.
Correct.
Arguably a game about Columbine?
A video game.
Yeah, that can't help but appeal to prurient interests.
It actually, like, goes through the motions where they shoot each person and burn the cafeteria down.
Who's producing this game, Marcus? Where is it coming from?
Well, I have the article right in front of me. Yeah, you can go to ColumbineGame.com. Danny Ledone.
Oh, that's just evil.
It's not evil, though. I think it might be an expression. It might help people to stop these kind of shootings.
Oh, so you think the gamer is?
It's not a gamer. It's a game for many people to play.
So this can be done online. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you're thinking perhaps it's an attempt to drive home the horror.
It might deter. Oh no, it won't. You know, it won't help people to stop. There's always going to be guns in schools, but I think it might be an experience that may be fucking scare. Oh, sorry about that word.
That's okay. We'll
it might scare. You bleep it out. Yeah, it might scare people. You know, because this stuff was real.
That's a possibility, I suppose. On the other hand, you gotta. You know, these things have to be viewed in the grand scope of things. Where do you put that on a continuum with the Left Behind game? Now, I've seen that thing out in Walmart. I've seen it in
Left Behind. Yep. Also,
well, not in Walmart, but I know it's. But I saw it at Best Buy.
Yep. Yeah. Kill little children and stuff. Yeah.
Well, yeah, Left Behind, where you kill everybody who isn't a fundamentalist evangelical.
Hmm. Well, I don't. I'm not in the fellowship, but I have been. Not atheist. I just believe in Mother Earth. So, mm-hmm. But I am a game player, and I'd like to play this game, even though it's wrong, and it follows everything that the two kids did. I just don't know.
Well, I can't help but think that it would leave you with a really, really creepy feeling.
Creepy feeling, exactly. And I'd be like, why did I play this? Exactly.
Yeah. Well, back when I still had time for it, i.e., before the kids got older,
right.
I was an inveterate gamer, and frankly, I loved the shoot. I love first person shoot 'em ups as much as there was one that came out for PC a few years ago called Klingon Honor Guard.
Mm. I love the soundtrack.
Oh, Lord, that was fun.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and it didn't, you know, and by the same token that I, as a child, Marcus, I watched Wile E. Coyote attempt to dynamite the Roadrunner.
Fucking
100,000 times if I saw it. One. Never made me want to dynamite anybody.
Yeah, I know. Getting boulders pushed on his head and running into bricks.
Yeah,
walls, I know.
Right. I mean, the biggest danger to me as a little tiny child, my mother had to hide the umbrellas when we came home from Mary Poppins. Because I was heading to the roof.
So you didn't jump off the roof. I know. I did it. It landed on my head.
I know.
Train Bramming.
Hey, Marcus, good to hear from you, man. I hope we'll hear from you again.
I sure will. Thank you, Bob.
You take
Bye.
Care.
Bye.
Bye now. And let's see. All first-person shooters are fine. Again, it's all Wile E. Coyote. On the other hand, the intent behind it, you know, because, you know, with something like Klingon Honor Guard, you're out in space. It's clearly unreal. On the other hand, I remember seeing one that was very, very disturbing at one of the arcades one time called Silent Scope, where you were a sniper. Agnes, you've seen Klingon Honor Guard. I tell you what, we'll start. Let's go ahead. We've got a couple of minutes. Let's start another phone call. We'll hold over through the news if we have to. Is Jim still there, Agnes?
Uh-huh.
There you is.
Uh-huh. My name's Carl.
I like me some fried potatoes. Mm-hmm.
Along with some onions and mustard. Uh-huh.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Ain't right for a man to lie with another man. You know that. For the good book says, Bob.
That's what it says. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Oh, not a heck of a lot. I met one of the people from that wonderful film the other night at the George Lindsay Film Festival down here.
Really?
Yeah, the lady who plays the little boy's mama.
Oh yeah.
Carl looks and says, "I reckon you know I wouldn't ever cut y'all up." Yeah, she's a wonderful actress.
Well, that was the whole thing that for Billy Bob Thornton. He did that as a theater project, I believe.
That's yeah, that's where it started.
That was conceived, yeah. I just wanted to tell you, up at Walter Reed, there's something interesting that happened, that they had ordered one of the double amputees, as far as the arms are concerned, one of the soldiers, to answer the telephone. You know, they put mm-hmm. the boys in a medical holding company.
Right.
And he was ordered to answer the telephone and had to get a doctor's note as to why he could not perform that duty.
You're kidding.
Mm-mm.
Where did you run across that, Jim?
I'm.
Well, you know, it kind of fits with what we're dealing with, because after all, you heard we heard from Representative Phil Gingrey early in the week or late last week, complaining that it was the troops' fault for leaving food laying around, because you're going to get mice and you're going to get roaches if there's food laying around. Remember that?
Well, yeah. That general is just absolutely stupid. I mean, I can predict this for him. He's not going to even get a 32. He's going to get a 134, which is dereliction of duty. Now, 32 is a general court-martial, but a 134, that's a dereliction of duty, and I think that's where he's going.
That carries pension problems, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Yes, well, that wouldn't break me up too much in the instance of these people.
No,
because that is dereliction of duty, Jim.
But, I mean, even his XO, that nurse who's taken over, she knew about it. They all knew about it. I mean, you know.
Sure they did.
It's another scapegoat, that's all. I mean, this stuff's been going on for years up there. And that's not a VA hospital, that's a DOD hospital.
That's Pentagon stuff. Jim, stand by a minute. We got to hit the news, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. All right, we will be back. This is the Head On Radio Network. Time for the news. We'll continue our conversation with Jim when we come back. Hope you'll be around, too. 877-443-2366. You're listening to The Horn, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime?
This is the Quality News Network. The House Appropriations Committee today began debate and voted on party lines for the $124 billion emergency spending bill to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The bill also calls for a timetable for U.S. troops to leave Iraq. It now goes to the full House of Representatives. The House legislation sets the date for U.S. troops to start to leave Iraq by March 1, 2008, but no later than August 31st of that year. However, the Senate measure, which has the troop pullout date by March 31st, has not received enough votes to go forward. The Democrats needed 60 votes to approve the phased withdrawal resolution. The suspected number three Al-Qaeda official, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, allegedly confessed that he planned some 30 terror attacks, including September 11th. He also reportedly confessed to beheading Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. Mohammed is being held at the U.S. Naval Prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. One of Iraq's two vice presidents met with President Bush today at the White House. The Iraqi leader had recently been the target of an assassination attempt. A new report from the Pentagon describes some of the situation in Iraq as fitting the definition of a civil war. However, the term, quote, does not adequately capture the complexity of the conflict. Around security checkpoints in Baghdad today, 10 people were killed by suicide car bombers. Dozens were wounded. The U.S. military said in eastern Baghdad, 4 U.S. soldiers were killed today by 2 roadside bombs. 2 other soldiers were wounded. The Senate Judiciary Committee will allow subpoenas in the probe involving the recent firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. 5 Justice Department officials will be subpoenaed, as well as 6 of the 8 fired U.S. lawyers. As the rival factions Hamas and Fatah formed a new unity government, Israel responded today that it would not deal with the new government. At the United Nations, the 5 permanent Security Council members, along with Germany, have agreed on a new package of sanctions against Iran for its failure to halt its nuclear program. It will be presented to the rest of the Security Council members with a possible vote next week. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed the bill that moves up the state's primary to February 5th from June. As many as 19 other states are considering moving up their presidential primaries to February. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
A Columbia University report finds that binge drinking and pill abuse is becoming more extreme on college campuses. A new government report indicates that worldwide this winter was the warmest on record. It finds that from December through February, the combined land and ocean temperatures were 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit above average for that time period. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan warned today that the increasing number of subprime mortgage defaults could affect other economic sectors. In February, the Labor Department reported that wholesale-level inflation went up by 1.3%. In a separate report, the Labor Department stated that for the second week in a row, the number of unemployment claims went down. They dropped by 12,000 to 318,000. OPEC ministers met in Vienna today and decided to keep oil production steady at the current levels. And the world's most expensive pizza is available at a New York restaurant for $1,000 or about $125 a slice. The 12-inch luxury pizza has six types of caviar and fresh lobster. Light sweet crude is trading at $57.55 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 26 points at 12,159, NASDAQ up 7, S&P 500 up 5. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then, 7 minutes after the hour, and we return for the second hour, as Brian Reznor appropriately advised you. We were talking before the break with our good friend Jim about some of the shenanigans and malfeasance and misfeasance at Walter Reed. Are you still there, Jim?
Oh, yeah. I'm still here.
Okay, great, great. Sorry you had to wait.
No problem. You were saying,
so,
sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I thought we were going to...
Problem.
Yeah. So I think when we left off, we were talking about the fact that this was, you know, this was a VA, this was not a VA issue, that this was a Pentagon and DOD issue. And you started off by mentioning this, and I guess you heard this on IMUS, that a double amputee had to get a doctor's note for not being able to answer the phone.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was brought up yesterday, this morning, and yesterday morning as well.
I understand there's some institutional stuff that goes on in any organization the size of the military.
Oh yeah.
But it's at some point in time, Jim, does the American people get to just say, "What in the hell is going on here?"
Yeah, I think they do. I think you're going to see a lot of that happen very shortly, because the military healthcare system has been so overburdened by the past 4 years that a lot of things are coming out that they have managed to just keep hidden ever since basically Korea. And I can really foresee for the possibility of the collapse of the entire VA system, where they, instead of having VA hospitals, they just should give soldiers an identity card that would entitle them to treatment at any civilian hospital. And so these VA hospitals that in certain cases are okay, but in other cases they're not so okay, as we can see here. I mean, Walter Reed was supposed to be one of the better ones in the country, but apparently with the transfer of function to Bethesda and the zeroing out of dollars in the out years for those places, this is the result. You know what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but Jim, what part do you think is played by what I perceive to be an absolute lack of planning or comprehension of the bloodiness of this war?
I really can't answer that, Bob. I don't know. I really can't answer that with any degree of
because after all, we were told that, and you know, this stuff's out there. You can find the sound bites of Rumsfeld saying that we would be greeted as liberators.
Well,
that indicates to me that they didn't plan for us to have any significant casualties.
Well, I mean, you know, we were initially. That's what happened, and something obviously went wrong. I mean, for example, when the Germans invaded the Soviet Union in 1941, they were greeted as liberators with bread and salt. But by 1942, because of their behavior, then, of course, it became unsafe for German units to travel because of the increased partisan activity. I mean, who knows? I don't know. I don't know what's happened over there. I do believe that the conduct of that war and the way it's been pursued with no real plan to do what you're supposed to do and to try to get out of there, I think it's all been so bungled so badly that it's blown up in our face. It's just the way it's been handled with our proconsul, Mr. Bremer, and some of the shenanigans that have gone on over there. And
the $9 billion missing dollars in $100
bills.
Well,
that could have gone a long way toward trying to repair the infrastructure of Iraq and provide reliable electricity and reliable drinking water and like that. That's what these people want. They want the absence of war and the presence of peace so they can get back to their lives. I mean, it seems like that we have treated them as almost some type of untermensch, and it's really blown up in our faces because, you know, initially when they started with the IEDs, oh, they were like a 0.5. Now you've got IEDs over there that these guys are turning out that can take out an Abrams A1 tank with a shake charge. So, I mean, you know, they've responded quite admirably and accurately to their mission to make life over there as hard for us as they possibly can. And it's just real strange. I mean, we have really got our foot in a real bad place, and I can't see any real permanent removal of troops over there because we have an embassy there, we have assets there that have to be protected, and to be realistic, we cannot have a total withdrawal from Iraq now.
Well, among other people, Senator Clinton has said the same thing.
Obama said the same thing as well.
She said she would maintain a scaled-down American military and a force in Iraq that would stay off the streets and be there basically ad infinitum.
Well, I support that. I mean,
I
had to do
say that I do.
We had to do the same thing in Germany, okay?
This ain't Germany. We didn't start that way.
I don't care, but we still were there, and you can talk about so the cows come home about who shot John, but we're there, okay? And we got to deal with it.
Right, and it's like...
And you just can't say, Johnny comes home. That ain't going to work. I mean, you've got to face the politics of reality. And we just can't...
So some poor schlub, some bunch of poor schlubs are just going to have to keep getting blown up because we haven't figured out a way to have peace with honor yet?
Well, the only thing I can say to that is what that guy said when he was on the board, on the decks of the Titanic. That's just the way of it at this kind of time, ma'am. That's all I can offer you, in all honesty and reality.
I wonder what a minimal force, what purpose they would serve, Jim.
Embassy protection. Certain assets.
Well, of course, embassy protection. There's a contingent with every embassy.
And that's what Mrs. Clinton is talking about, and that's what Senator Obama is talking about. There is no permanent type of withdrawal scenario that's on the table right now. And don't expect for there to be. You know, that's just the way it is. And it's a bad situation. And it's the tar baby type scenario, but I think Clinton...
And we're stuck to it.
I think Mrs. Clinton and Senator Obama and other people who are trying to scale it down, well, scale it down is preferable to the, you know, no end in sight scenario. I mean, they're just being realistic and pragmatic. And that's
Well, to me, Jim, to me, Jim, scaled... scaled down is the same thing as no end in sight.
No, not necessarily. I mean,
at some point in time, we have to leave.
Well,
unless we are just going to admit that we have gone empire and garrison the country.
Eventually, but not conveniently. Unfortunately,
well,
it's
heartbreaking to me. It is truly heartbreaking to me because some kid from rural West Virginia or rural Alabama or inner city L.A. or Chicago or New York for years to come, Jim, is going to continue to pay the price for the foolhardy choices
of the
beady-eyed, bug-eared little man from Texas or Connecticut or wherever he's from.
Time immemorial, Bob. You know that. I know that. This is nothing new. But
I know. We keep hoping that we're going to grow as a human race, and we keep not growing.
Well, unfortunately, we have a way of growing to a certain point, and then every 20 years we have to pick ourselves up off the floor every 20 years or so because we messed up and done something else.
Because we ran backwards.
Yeah, well, I know it. But I do say one thing that possibly could come out of this, and it's something I've always supported, and that would be to reinstitute the draft. And I'll guarantee you one thing, if they did that, I think that leadership in Washington would think twice before getting ourselves involved in these imbroglios like Iraq and other places.
Yeah, because suddenly, one of the problems with protesting the war right now, I'm not endorsing a draft, Jim, but one of the problems with protesting and trying to stop wars now is that mostly the only people protesting are, 25 and up and probably more realistically 40 and up. And we can only protest on the weekends because we've got jobs we have to go to. And we'll get fired if we protest on Mondays or Wednesdays. You get a draft, and you'll have 17-year-olds and 16-year-olds in the street who have all the time in the world on their hands, and they won't go away.
Well, that's there is a method to the madness, or a madness to the method. And I think that I've always endorsed national service. You know that. I've always said that everybody who's able to should have to at least have 2 years of some national service, some form of it. I think it'd be good for the youth of this country. I really do. I believe wholeheartedly.
I don't believe that everybody needs to carry a gun and go learn how to kill people.
Well, it doesn't take people to get out and learn team building, teamwork, things like that.
But you can do that from a non-lethal standpoint, can't you?
Of that nature. I mean, I know you're going to have people who are going to say that I would have belonged to the Hitler Youth, which I probably would have, but that's just me. And
I'm
being honest with you about it. That's just how I feel.
Well, candor, look, we get candor here, and candor is what makes this place special.
Well,
thank
fine.
You, Jim. I appreciate it very, very much.
Okay, well, listen, y'all have a safe trip home, and I'll talk to you at some other point or along the road, a few clicks
all right.
Down the road or whatever, down the Audubon. And,
sounds good, Jim.
Sieg Heil.
Hey, take it easy. Sieg Heil? I'm going to take a break and come back and we'll talk some more. We'll go back, right back to the phones, I promise. 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers,
They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together, we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
All right, we're back. 24 minutes after the hour. And we will go straight to the phones. Wayne is calling. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
I was talking to your wife, man. But I'll talk now that I'm here, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you will.
You said Wayne's calling. I'm going to get it.
Yeah, that other Wayne.
Oh, God. Well, you know, I always have something to talk about. You know.
Sure.
Yeah. My nurses, the nurses that we've been working with and trying to raise money, they go into, you know how messed up unions are. You know, the United Steelworkers represent a lot of... what is it? LPNs?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Right.
At the, you know, same hospital that the Kentucky nurses represent the, what's the other ones? Registered nurses. And now the United Steelworkers also represent maintenance and janitorial staff and, you know, kitchen and yada, yada, yada. Anyway, they are in negotiations with Appalachian Regional Hospital as we speak. And, you know, they schedule negotiations 2 months before contracts start. And the steelworkers have a bunch of people in Kentucky. And, you know, they've been in negotiations for 6 weeks now and have not discussed salary pay yet. And, you know, ARH is just trying to drag the thing out. In fact, I understand that they have asked for an extension. You know, and it's going to get ugly. Now, in August, the Kentucky Nurses Association and West Virginia Nurses Association start their negotiations because their contract is up the end of September. And, you know, it's very expensive to... You have to have representatives at these negotiations. And that's very expensive. And, you know, like the, well, the local union down in Hinton only has 19 or 20 members. And to send one person there for 2 months is, you know, you're talking about $15,000. I mean, you got to pay the person, you know, I mean, the person can't give up his pay, his or her pay. They
No.
have to be paid. They have to pay for motel rooms, transportation, meals, the whole nine yards. And, you know, ARH knows that. And this little bitty local doesn't have any money. And, you know, we're trying to raise money for them. And, you know, but I'm going to tell you, this thing you're going to see, well, I think that they're going to force these people into a situation where they have no other choice but to strike, you know. I mean, these are the same people.
And what? But what happens then? They've got a no-strike clause.
They can strike after 10 days for during contracts. They just give a 10-day notice. You know, I mean, this is they
right.
can't reach agreement. So, I mean, there. You know, there comes to. I don't know all the legalities because I don't know everything in their contract. But you know, these people have no problem whatsoever breaking contracts. You know why?
No, they've been trying to break one for a year and a half now.
They have, in fact, been breaking it.
I
mean, you know, when they said we're not paying you 40 for 36 anymore, they stopped paying them. You know, that's if you'll remember, the nurses gave a 10-day notice and threatened
right.
to go on strike. And you know, I don't know, the day before they were going to go on strikes, when ARH said, "Look, don't do this. Let's go to binding arbitration. Whatever the arbitrator says, we will stand by."
Yeah, and that's what these sleazy son of a guns have been appealing all the way to the
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the arbitration came back in the nurse's favor that ARH did in fact violate the contract, and that the 36 or 40 for 36 is in the contract, and you have to pay them. And ARH says, "We're not going to listen to that. We're going to go to court and appeal it." After they gave their word that they would, you know, whatever the arbitrator said. And,
It's pity there's no fine structure somewhere along the way to punish somebody for that kind of egregious bad faith.
Well, you know, the fine structure was the interest, I guess, you know. The judge in Kentucky said to pay them their back pay plus 5% interest. And, you know. I think it's going to get ugly. And, you know, I don't see any other thing that I think these people are going to have to go on strike because, you know, one of the things that they're going to insist on is that they no longer have the 40 for 36. And, you know, they're going to try to take every benefit, everything they have away from them, you know. And, you know, you remember the Kroger strike? Well,
sure.
There were Kroger strikes all over the country, but here locally. And do you remember all the people arguing about how, well, the unions are unfair. They don't understand that, you know, Kroger has to compete with Walmart and they can't afford to pay their health care
right.
anymore and yada, yada, yada. You know, yesterday coming home, you know, they always have the stock report and how it affected local stocks.
Right.
Since that strike, Kroger's profits are up 35%. And the union got what they wanted.
And Walmart's been sinking like a rock.
Exactly. So, you know, don't come at me with that argument. You know.
No, that one's dead, and frankly, that it never carried any water with me anyway, Wayne, because
no,
the answer to that question
is
to go and organize Walmart.
That's exactly right. And then, you know, and with the nurses situation, you're going to, you know, you're going to hear the same. Oh, the hospitals, you know, healthcare costs so much. You know, ARH is one of those not-for-profit hospitals.
Yeah, with multimillionaire executives?
Yeah. Well, you know how they, how, you know, they don't make any profit. At the end of the year, they got $10 million left over, and they split it up between their, you know, I'm sure it's way more than that, but then they just split it between their CEOs, so they didn't make any profit.
Yeah, we ain't got any profit.
No. So.
Time for the tax breaks to kick in. Well, you know what? Wayne, I mentioned that I went to the little barbecue joint for ribs this evening, and I had a very happy thing happen to me there. While we're on this topic,
what was that?
I pulled into this place. You know, this is Alabama. So you know, seeing a union sticker is kind of like seeing dinosaur tracks.
Yeah.
But by golly, I pulled in there and there was a sticker on an old Ford Ranger sitting next to me. Said proud member of the UA.
Hmm.
And I walked in there and I said, Where's that union pipe fitter?
Did it have Louisiana plates on it?
No, man, it was Alabama plates.
Or I mean Alabama, rather.
Yeah.
All right.
And he looked at me and he said, I am. What's it to you?
Yeah, he probably was, yeah, thinking, all right, I'm ready.
Yeah, and all of a sudden I'm thinking, you know, I just asked for an ass kicking.
Yeah.
But I stuck my hand out and said, damn proud to meet you. Hope there's a bunch more like you down here. He said, there's a few of us.
Yeah, there are.
But he's a meeting-going member of his local over in Muscle Shoals. His daddy was president of the Carpenters local here. And so, you know, they exist.
They do exist. I'd really be interested to know, you know, what their package is.
He gets $29.12, but that's not all of it.
That's not, I'm okay, that probably doesn't include his bennies then.
Yeah, that's not the whole package.
Well, that's not bad.
But there's no state prevailing wage down here.
It's a right to work state.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you know, a union.
But you know, there's the thing that I went away from it with, though, Wayne, is that there's enough of a structure down here to begin to make progress.
Yes,
and if the Employee Free Choice Act is passed and signed into law, this place can change.
That's exactly right, Bob, and that goes to my point the other night, is that, you know, all these red states aren't that red, you know. In a lot of those states, a few points swing one way or the other, and you could color them blue, buddy. And that's very good to hear. They must, what's he work? Chemical plants, probably, I guess.
He does commercial. He was telling me he's working at the construction going on at the new Marriott over here right now.
Okay. Okay.
They got a big, fancy, beautiful waterfall fountain that he said was almost his. He said, I'm almost personally responsible for that fountain.
Oh, all right. Well, they got a lot of bathrooms in them, Marriott, you know.
They do indeed.
Usually one per room. Well, that's good to hear. Very good to hear. Did you turn them on to the station?
Darn right.
All right. All right.
And he said he'd try to tune it in. I wrote down the web address for him. I said, reckon you don't hear a whole lot of pro-union talk on the radio down here.
I can imagine.
He just looked at me. He just looked at me like I had three heads, you know.
Right. Well,
and
I can imagine.
We don't hear any.
That's a typical response from a union member down there. Yeah, you got a problem with that. Because I figure generally people do, you know. But
you know, again, I hope that our side of the fight will figure out how important taking the fight to a region like this really, really is.
I think they do. You know, unions have messed up for years. I really think we're getting smarter again. You know, and we have to.
You know, build your base, build your strength, and the next thing you know, maybe this isn't a right to starve state anymore.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
He was telling me, he said he worked for a private contractor for about 5 years. And he worked with an old fellow who's 68 years old now and still doing it. Non-union, pipe fitter, master at his craft, $14 an hour.
Right.
No benefits, no health care.
And he can't quit because he doesn't have health care. He doesn't have a pension. You know. That's,
right.
That's the reality of not having.
Yeah. So, no retirement, no dignity. Work till you die. And then they'll find some young kid that they can pay $10 an hour to. And maybe by the time he's 70, he'll be up to 14.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, you go on a construction job. You could be the construction industry is you go to work at a job to work yourself out of a job. I mean, that's the nature of the game, you know. And so then consequently, you could be the greatest carpenter, pipe fitter, whatever, and you leave that job, then you go, and usually you're going to, a lot of times you go to another company. Well, their story is, well, they don't know you. Yeah, I know you were making 25, but I don't know you could do this and all that. Well, we'll start you out at 15. And, I've seen it a million times. A guy go, all right, I'll take that, but in a couple of weeks, we're going to talk. And in a couple of weeks, you talk, and the guy gives you a dollar raise. And then you're done for the rest of the job.
Well, I mean, am I just thinking crazy stuff, Wayne, do they organize the building trades? I mean, do they organize down here?
I am sure that there are organizers down there. Now, how effective or aggressive they are, I can't answer you that. Not at this particular moment, but I could find out.
Well, I mean, he was telling me that he was telling me about the Marriott job, and he said before that he was in Nebraska.
Right. Because you got to travel.
Yeah.
But, if you had more union presence, along with union goes market share. You can have, all the union people you want. If you only have 10% of the market share, there's not very much work,
Right.
So, and
but he said their whole local stays busy.
Well, that's very good. Where's their local out of?
Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
Okay. I will report back to you on that local. Believe me,
cool.
By tomorrow evening, I'll know how many members they got and the whole nine yards.
Well, it is inspiring.
It is inspiring.
I've got a very dear friend who's on the. It tells you. I'm not telling tales out of school or anything, but it's worth it, Wayne, to remind people what it means to have union membership and to have union representation. A fellow that, and it's hard for me to realize, when I think about him, we're all still 16 and 17 years old, but we're not. I grew up with this guy, very dear friend of mine, 2 years older than me. When we got down here, I called him to see if he could be a pallbearer for my dad's funeral. And he said, I'd love to, but I can't, just had a heart attack.
And you thought,
and,
hell, you're only 18.
Yeah, right. in my mind, you're still, but
right.
that's 30 years worth of sausage and biscuits and biscuit and gravy and butter on the pancakes.
Exactly.
But the thing is, he said, I can't do it. I said, well, are you okay? He says, yeah. I'm on a medical leave for 6 weeks. And he said, everything's safe and everything's good. He says, because thank God, years ago, when I became an electrician, I got in the IBEW. And my job is safe while I get well.
Yeah, it is safe. Yeah, it is safe.
And he's got short-term disability coverage, so his family's safe. His medical coverage continues.
That's what the union gets for you, buddy. You get taken care of, And that's what, the story I'm telling you about non-union people going to a different job and dropping in. Union workers don't have to worry about negotiating their pay. It's negotiated for them. There are contracts. You go to a different contractor and your pay is the same. Now, I always tell all the superintendents and the owners of companies, you could pay more. We have absolutely no objection to that whatsoever.
But when you've got somebody else thinking for a group, and someone else is thinking about things like what happens if somebody gets sick, what happens if somebody falls ill, what happens if somebody gets injured, that really means something, because odds are, if you're negotiating for yourself, that's not something you're thinking about. You're just thinking about trying to get a paycheck, keep the lights on, and keep the babies fed.
That's exactly, well, that's what you have to think about. You know, that's the position you're put in, you know. But when you have negotiated contracts, and, well, that's why they call it a brotherhood, because people
yeah.
care about other people and think about other people. And, you know, with that goes the realization is that could be me. You know, that could be me. And it was me a couple of years ago, if you'll remember.
That's true. I can't remember. Did they put in buttons or a zipper on your chest?
They did some really nice stitching.
And a tattoo of a pirate ship.
Yeah, really nice stitching. Yeah. I don't know what the hell they did when they went in there, but, you know, it seems to be working so far.
No complaints.
No, not yet, anyway.
All right, man, I'll be talking to you later. It's all, you know, it's always good to remember that for all the grim news we get from time to time, that there's a possibility of hope out there.
Yes, there
is. If only people are willing to work for it.
Yes, there is. That's what keeps people going. It's hope. There has to be hope, you know.
Yeah, there does. All right, man, have yourself a great night.
When are you heading out, man?
We're bugging out of here Saturday. We'll be in West Virginia Sunday.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, we'll sit down, have a beer, cigar, or something like that when I get back.
Oh, more than one. Of both.
Talk to you soon, man.
Okay, pal. Bye.
Bye now. Yes, I am taking you out, Agnes. I love Wayne, but you come first, honey. And I tell you what, we'll take a quick break. Come back, more of your calls, 877-443-2366, 877-4. Head on. Yeah, I can't tell you how surprising it was to see a union sticker on a car in Alabama. It engenders hope. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit terrified, and then I see the look in your
turn
eyes.
Turn around, bright eyes.
Every now and then I fall apart.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit angry.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Tuh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Eleven minutes before the hour. And we will go straight to the phones. Preston is calling from Denver. Hey, Preston, good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob. I liked what your previous caller said about how those red states, so-called, sometimes aren't so red after all, and certainly have the potential to become blue. I think it was Alabama, actually, and I don't know if it was inadvertent, but they put a socialist on their state quarter. You know how each state has their own image on the quarter?
Yes, indeed, Preston. That socialist was born 8 miles as the crow flies from where I sit.
Great. And that's, in case some of your listeners don't know, Helen Keller.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think it was the governor of, maybe that was Alabama too, that was talking about how he was using a argument from scripture to advance a policy to raise taxes for social services.
He was that's Bob Riley. He's a Republican. He's one of the as you know, on the sort of continuum of loathsomeness of Republicans. He's not as loathsome as most. He advanced a biblical argument for reducing the tax burden on the very poorest of the poor. That was defeated at the polls, and the business community in this state said that he was, and this is where I stole the line from, crazier than a sprayed roach.
Oh, God. Oh, wow. Interesting. I I'm actually in a union. I'm in the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
Oh, that's a great union.
Yeah, and I get a good publication from them about every 3 months or so about the organizing efforts going on in government services around the country. And, you know, it's fascinating how much activity there is that you so rarely hear about in the typical media. But it's out there if you keep your eyes open to it. And I also get the small publications that some of the socialist groups put out, like the Militant and stuff like that, and find out about all these courageous strikes going on and the meatpacking and construction and just kind of all over the place.
And that's a very good word to use, Preston, because it does. It takes a profound amount of courage to stand up and strike against a misbehaving employer. And misbehaving is probably, in most of these instances, a very, very mild word. Because take a working man who fears for the very his very well-being and his family's financial well-being, to get that person to the point where they're willing to withhold their labor. It is profound.
Yep. That's right. And I think one of the biggest strikes we've seen recently has been among janitors and actually a lot of immigrants. You know, and they've got the threat of deportation hanging over their heads all the time. And I don't know, I've been reading this book called No One Is Illegal, and it's from Haymarket Press, which does a lot of good work on labor history issues. And it contrasts the approaches from, like, the AFL, which was kind of, you know, anti-foreign labor, versus the CIO and the IWW, which was trying to, you know, make workers from anywhere get together and work together because, you know, the capital and the big business people, they're moving globally. And, you know, labor has to kind of respond internationally as well. And I've been just, this history of the IWW and the way they were brutally attacked by, like, the KKK and this other group called the Order of Caucasians in California. You know, that's why so much farm labor was kept down. You know, they didn't get organized and they weren't treated as well as some of the industrial workers. You know, they became, you know, they moved up in their standard of living. But to this day, we have people working in the fields that are much like slave labor. And it's a real shame. But, again, there's a lot of courage there and a lot of effort taking place.
Well, one of the really inspiring things that I see, I've looked at the Carpenter's magazine more than a couple of times. The network's even been featured in it. And it's really neat, Preston, because the left-hand page is printed in English, and the right-hand page is an exact translation in Spanish.
That's perfect. That's great. You know, I've been studying Spanish, and I've had a very difficult time with it. You know, so many people say they've got to learn English. These people need to learn English. And, you know, they certainly should try, do the best. But, you know, I've been able to buy books and CDs and stuff, and I've just been struggling with it, but I did find a new way to study it, and that's by when I get DVDs, I use the Spanish subtitle option, and so as I'm watching some movie, I can look at the Spanish translation as I go along, and that's really been helpful, actually.
Well, you know, and I'm not being sarcastic or flippant at all. At least I know how to warn somebody that the floor is slick. Cuidado piso mojado, you know, because the little yellow sign in the grocery store when it snows says caution, wet floor on one side, and it says cuidado piso mojado. I think I'm saying it right. So I know that, you know, hey, look out, the floor's wet. You know, I can do that.
That's great. You know, it's been also good to see one of the papers here in Denver, one of the major business papers, the Denver Post. Over the past week, they did a series called Fortress America, and it was a four-part series about the militarization of the border. And, you know, that's kind of becoming a jobs program itself, you know, like the military can be. And, you know, there's a union, you know, for the people in the prisons, and there's going to be jobs for Boeing to build this fence and all these detention centers and so on and so forth. But the Post series really humanized the people, you know, who are being herded into these detention centers or being separated from their families and so forth. And just today, yesterday, there was a letter to the editor of the Post who really laid it out and talked about how there needs to be a comprehensive immigration reform that considers things like trade policy and neoliberal economics. You know, we've been talking a lot about neoconservatism, but neoliberalism, you know, not really related to liberals, but to the global economic policies to privatize
right.
everything. This letter to the editor mentions that. It mentions the history of U.S. military intervention in the region of Latin America, and, you know, says, you know, we need to address the issues more holistically. You know, I'm certainly sympathetic to people who are getting undercut by, you know, more desperate employees, and, you know, we need to address that as well. You know, I'd like to see us, you know, hire U.S. citizens and in government jobs and have them paid well, and but there's a labor shortage going on in so many fields. And so for people from Latin America to be able to come up here and to survive, you know, considering what our nation's been doing to them for the past several decades, I think, you know, there's some justice there.
Well, Preston, you raised a very good point, and it's a chance for me to shamelessly promote this program, because in about a week's time, I'm tickled pink. We're gonna be having somebody on the program that I've read a lot of. I've watched him on TV. I've read a lot of his writings, and he impresses me very much. I don't know if you've ever seen A Cook's Tour or No Reservations with Tony Bourdain. But Anthony Bourdain, the chef and the writer, is going to be on the program next week. And the reason he's going to be on the program is to talk about specifically what you're addressing, because his industry runs on the backs of immigrant labor.
Okay.
And he freely acknowledges it, and he wants to fix it.
Okay, great.
And he's got the right attitude.
I'm not familiar with him, but I'll certainly keep an ear out for that. And speaking of promoting your show, I've sent several emails to my union about your program and to talk radio generally, and you know, to the militant and to these other kind of marginal groups that are involved with these critical actions. But, you know, I mean, if they're just putting their paper in a laundromat here and there, they're going to stay marginal, and they do have opportunities to reach other people, like through this program. And
at some point, Ask Me is on our list. We actually have a list, Preston, of people that we want to sit down and talk with the headquarters organization.
Great.
About seeing funding for this network.
Great.
Because the opportunity to give people a voice. I mean, I'm not kidding when I say that it's your voice. That's what this is about. Because sooner or later you have to have a discussion or a determination about whether or not a broadcast operation is about the people who are listening and participating, or is it merely a life support system for selling Preparation H?
Right. Right.
And if this is a life support system for selling Preparation H, I'll turn the thing dark and walk away.
Right. Just today, I was listening to a community radio station, and there's a woman who wrote a book called Born Again, which is about the kind of authoritarian Christian right going more global. And she talked about how much we can learn from their organizing and how much money they put in to media infrastructure and how effective that's been. And that she's just saying, you know, she doesn't like what they're doing, but it's effective activism. And
well, it is indeed. There's another author out there named Dan Gilgoff who will be on this program again very soon, who has just released a new book called The Jesus Machine. And it's about how James Dobson and the religious right, as he asserts, is winning the culture wars.
Okay. I just got my copy today of Misquoting Jesus, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Bart Ehrman will be on the show soon, too.
Okay. And there again, though, not to completely unfairly portray that movement, I mean, Dobson, I think, is a very negative force in many ways, but his group does criticize some of the violent video games, which I think can be a real problem. In fact, the Pentagon sent $40 million to USC and to some company to develop a video game and other projects to kind of, it desensitizes people in some cases.
Yeah,
we don't go out there.
And to acclimate people.
Exactly. So, I mean...
President, I hate to interrupt, but I've got to roll along because we are at the top of the hour and we've got an interview coming soon, but I sure do enjoy our chats.
Me too, Bob. Take care.
And when the time comes that we go to sit down with Ask Me, maybe I'll be in touch and you can put in a good word as we go.
I'd be happy to do that. You bet.
Thank you very, very kindly, President.
You bet. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And I tell you what, let's keep rolling and go back to the phones. Our good friend Billy Shears almost never calls in, but he's called in, and I wanted to make sure I get to him before we start the interview. Billy, you there?
Yeah. Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
I'm doing fine. Hey, just a couple of things. I know you're on tight schedule here, but number one, I bet you're anxious to get back to your own bed.
You have no idea.
Okay. Number two, Agnes did a really, really good job today on the show. I think Joe Vecchio needs to be watching out for Agnes. She might be taking it. She didn't know.
Agnes didn't gun in for Joe, but I was really, really proud of her. She took that bull by the horns in an uncertain moment and ran with it like an old pro. I was proud of her. I could just bust.
I know. She did a great job. And the main thing is I want to thank you. You are a stand-up guy, a real pro. You came to the aid of Guy James with your donation, and I appreciate that immensely. And your listeners ought to know that you are, and I know they know this, a top-notch guy. And I encourage your listeners, please support Guy. You know, he's a great guy also. And
yes, he is.
And also, one more thing. Because of that, Bob, I want you to think about this. I want you to pick a song I'm going to put on the CD, and I want you to put a special song that you want. Don't tell anybody, because they're going to have to donate to find out.
Okay.
Okay?
Oh, do not appeal to my old DJ fetish.
I can't wait to hear it. Can't wait.
All right. Hey, and, Billy, thanks so much.
Okay, one more thing, too. John,
sure.
Fox. Come on, John. You have to come through with your commentary for Monday now, buddy. Everybody's going to be waiting to hear what you do. Okay. Hey, Bob, I'll see you. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care, Billy.
Bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Billy Shears, who, of course, he's the one that made the heroic offer to do the promotional disc for Guy James in return for folks joining up and being the group of 60 who... puts together $10 a month each to keep Guy on the air. And what a whale of an effort that is. News is next, and when we come back after that, our conversation with Rick Ufford Chase from the Christian Peace Witness for Iraq organization. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. And I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill, the House Appropriations Committee today approved a $124 billion emergency spending bill, nearly $96 billion of which will go to the continuation of wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The bill also sets September 1st of next year as a deadline to end combat in Iraq. The legislation could be up for a full House debate early next week. The Senate also considered a separate Democratic resolution that set a date of March 31, 2008, for the president to bring U.S. troops home. That measure failed to get the 60 votes needed to continue, however. For the first time, the Pentagon has characterized some of the violence in Iraq as a civil war, echoing an earlier analysis by U.S. intelligence agencies. The suspected number three al-Qaeda official, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, allegedly confessed that he planned some 30 terror attacks, including September 11th. He also reportedly confessed to beheading Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. Mohammed's trial is closed. His comments were provided by the Pentagon. In Baghdad, Iraq's former vice president has lost his appeal and has been sentenced to hang within 30 days. Taha Yassin Ramadan was tried along with Saddam Hussein for massacring Shias in the 1980s. One of Iraq's two vice presidents met with President Bush today at the White House. The Iraqi leader had recently been the target of an assassination attempt. The Senate Judiciary Committee will allow subpoenas in the probe involving the recent firings of 8 U.S. attorneys. 5 Justice Department officials will be subpoenaed, as well as 6 of the 8 fired U.S. lawyers. The United Nations Security Council has agreed on a new package of sanctions against Iran for its failure to stop its nuclear program. Under the new pact, Iranian arms exports would be banned, and those involved with Tehran's nuclear program would be subject to having their assets frozen. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed the bill that moves up the state's primary to February 5th from June. As many as 19 other states are considering doing the same thing so that their residents can have a bigger impact on the nomination process. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next. I'm Laurel Crisson.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. CollaborativeDivorce.tv.
A new government report indicates that worldwide this winter was the warmest on record. The National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration says ocean and land temperatures for December through February were 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit above normal. Temperature records have been kept since 1880. NASA and the Italian Space Agency say they've scanned huge ice deposits on Mars' south pole using an orbiter. Their findings, the frozen water is so plentiful that if melted, it would blanket the planet in 36 feet of water. A report from Columbia University says that prescription drug use has increased dramatically among American college students. The study also says nearly 50% of those on college campuses illegally use drugs or binge drink on a regular basis. And former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan warned today that the increasing number of subprime mortgage defaults could affect other economic sectors. Cisco Systems will pay $3.2 billion in cash for the online meeting company WebEx Communications. And light sweet crude oil has been trading below the $58 a barrel mark today. It's currently trading at $57.55 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 26, the Nasdaq up 7, the S&P was up 5. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty, 9 minutes after the hour. We're a little late getting to it because I ran the last hour a little bit long because I wanted everybody to get a chance to get their say in before we started our conversation, which I am waiting to find out if we're ready to have. And good, okay. We are joined by Rick Ufford Chase, and I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. He is with the Christian Peace Witness for Iraq. Now, tomorrow evening, over 3,500 religious leaders, Christian leaders, are going to gather at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. 3,500 Christian leaders from 48 states to protest what can only be called a massive violation of anything remotely resembling a Christian principle, that being our attack on Iraq. Rick, are you there?
I am here, Bob.
Thank you so much for joining us. Did I pronounce your name right?
Unbelievably, you actually pronounced it perfectly.
Oh, okay. You know, fools rush in where angels fear to tread, so I just, you know, march on. I'm really proud, first of all, let me say, I am very, very proud to know what you and others are doing starting tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about it, please.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you and to speak with your listeners. This is an effort, the Christian Peace Witness for Iraq, is a grassroots mobilization of some 25 to 30 different Christian, Catholic, and Protestant peace organizations. We came together back in the fall with a common commitment to try and lift up an intentionally Christian, intentionally nonviolent, positive affirmation about what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ, and to insist that the war must come to an end, that we must support our troops in every way we can as we bring them home and help them to reunite with their families and rebuild their lives, that we want a long-term commitment to the rebuilding of Iraq that does not benefit U.S. corporations, but that shows the world that that we intend to be a good international partner, that we want to say no one more time to torture, and that we mean it this time, and that we want that peace dividend that we've been waiting for now more than 20 years to show up and to go to work in our communities in order to bring genuine security home.
Well, and that I think that is such a valid observation, Rick, because the war on Iraq, more and more we find out, do we not, that the war on Iraq is a war also on the American people. It's a war on the poor, it's a war on the working class, and it's a war on everything that we hold as, you know, the whole we hold these truths to be self-evident thing. It's a war on all of that, isn't it?
Well, that's our concern. As Christian leaders across the country, it's been our experience over and over again that we have all kinds of ways in which, while we're talking about trying to create a secure world in the wake of the September 11 disasters, in the midst of that conversation, we actually continue to ignore the ways in which our families are most insecure. And while we spend $450 billion on the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, we fight over what ends up being pennies on the dollar for things like genuine health care that would support families here, or better schools, or making sure that every job pays a dignified wage that people can actually support their families on.
And all of those things are inexorably tied to, you know, I've referred to Iraq as a meat grinder, as a rat hole, as, you know, good money thrown after bad. It's a tragedy of monumental proportions, and it's one that we have manufactured, and it's one that only we can end. And it would seem that you and Christian Peace Witness for Iraq, you recognize that. How did you manage to put together, this looks like a pretty diverse group to me. How did you pull it together?
Well, it was a pretty fascinating experience, actually. I was part of an organization called Declaration of Peace that's been doing phenomenal work across the country to build opposition to the war over the last several years. Back in September, they did a week of actions here in Washington, D.C., and I was invited to help provide leadership for a day that was an intentionally interfaith and nonviolent witness here in Washington. And as a part of that witness, we held an interfaith service, about 250 of us, in a park, in Upper Senate Park down near Capitol Hill. And then together we walked to the Hart Senate office building, and about 70 of us went on inside and did a prayer service, a quiet prayer service, in the atrium of the Hart Senate office building, and were eventually arrested that afternoon. And in fact, I just finished that legal process up and was convicted yesterday in a D.C. court for unlawful assembly. Although the judge said at the end of the day that he thought that we had conducted ourselves with remarkable dignity, and he was very appreciative of our nonviolent witness, and he ended up suspending the sentence and fining us $50 to be paid to the Crime Victims Fund. But anyway, coming out of that experience, there were a number of us who said this was such a powerful witness that it's time that Christians take responsibility for our own stuff. It's our recognition that much of the rest of the world sees this war in Iraq as a Christian aggression, rightly or wrongly, and I believe all too often, I think, rightly, and that we as Christians have been far too lax, far too lazy, and have not created the grassroots movement that insists that we will not allow this war to be carried out in our names. And so we simply put that idea forward to partners in peace fellowships from all the way from the Pentecostal Peace Fellowship to Pax Christi in the Catholic world, Sojourners and the Alliance, the Christian Alliance for Progress, and the Presbyterian Peace Fellowship that I work for, Episcopal Peace Fellowship, all kinds of different peace organizations came together. And after our first phone call, we immediately had consensus on what our goal was and how we would do it. And the experience of organizing for this event has been by far the most exciting thing I've ever participated in.
Now, Rick, I'm not trying to be divisive at all, but do you have any Southern Baptists?
The Baptist tradition is a very interesting thing to try and get your head around. The Baptist
tell me about it. I'm still recovering.
America is actually a strong partner in this event, and they have a great website if anybody wants to take a look at it. And they do not stand; they do not represent any of the different Baptist streams, but they have members from all of the different Baptist streams, including the Southern Baptists. And so, insofar as it's been possible to reach out to that part of the world, we've certainly done so. Having said that, we're aware that before this war began, every single major denomination in this country, all of the traditional denominations, including the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops, with the only exception being the Southern Baptists, sent letters to our president saying, don't do it, it's morally wrong, and it's a quagmire. And we were ignored. And so this is an attempt, instead of sending letters, to insist that we're going to take this conversation to the White House. We expect about 4,000 people will be gathered, what we say, united by the cross against the war. And we also know that there will be 200 simultaneous local services that will be taking place across the country while we're here in Washington tomorrow night.
That is just amazing. It's going to be a vigil. Is anyone going to be speaking?
Yes,
or
here's the plan.
Is this a silent?
And actually, I want to let your listeners know that it's not too late to participate either in Washington or in their local communities. If you're interested in finding out more, there's a website called ChristianPeaceWitness.org, and you can type in on that website, you can type in your zip code and find the closest service to you, or you can certainly come to Washington. At 7 o'clock, we will fill the National Cathedral. In fact, we've been working all day today to create overflow capacity because we expect to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,000 to 5,000 people minimum for this witness, and the cathedral can only hold about 3,500 of us. At the end of the service, during which there will be four speakers, we will then walk in a candlelight procession 3.5 miles down Massachusetts Avenue to Lafayette Park in front of the White House. And at about 10 o'clock or 10:15 tomorrow night, after hearing several more speakers at the White House, we will do a procession, a candlelight procession that will encircle the White House in prayer. And there are some 700 to 800 people who have, as they've registered online, have told us that they're considering acts of civil disobedience, which in this case would be simply completing the circle of light and prayer by kneeling in front of the White House gate on Pennsylvania Avenue is likely to be an arrestable offense.
That part of it just makes my head spin, Rick. Who will be doing the speaking?
During the service, there will be four kind of keynote witnesses. One will be Bernice Powell Jackson, who is with the World Council of Churches. She heads up the North American area of the World Council of Churches. Celeste Zapala will be speaking. She is a Methodist whose son was killed in the war. He was a National Guard and was killed in the war. She's quite moving. There will also be Reverend Warnock, who is a devotee of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and he will be speaking tomorrow night. And then the last speaker at the service will be Reverend Jim Wallace, who was the founder of Sojourners and the Call to Renewal, and continues to be the editor of Sojourners magazine and a well-known author.
This is exciting. I mean that sincerely, Rick. Have you gotten any? I don't want if it makes you uncomfortable or anything. I don't want you to necessarily respond. But will there be any of our any of our elected representatives going to be joining you?
It doesn't make me uncomfortable at all. We've extended the invitation to everyone, and that certainly includes elected representatives. Though we've been really careful, actually, Bob, to point out that this is first and foremost an expression of faith and not a political venture. We believe that what we're doing has serious political implications and ought to have. But even if no one showed up tomorrow night, even if there was no media coverage and no politician showed up, it is an important act of faith for us to begin by being in worship with one another and finding our voice once again as we begin to go back out to our home communities and find ways to try and let the world know that we stand firmly, firmly against this war.
How does this intermesh or interplay, Rick, with Islam itself? Because obviously what little Christian community there was in Iraq we have largely destroyed and blown up and killed. And you know, tragically enough, that was one of the oldest Christian communities in the world, and they've been scattered to the four winds. Is there any kind of an interface with the Muslim community?
We have said to all of our interfaith partners, both Jewish and Muslim, that on this one, we're asking for the opportunity, with their support and hopefully with their blessing, to have a distinctively Christian witness. We're clear that we're doing that not because we do not believe in reaching out to Muslim brothers and sisters, but rather because we believe we have a responsibility to begin with repentance for our own participation, wittingly or otherwise, in what's taken place. It's our expectation that as we begin to build a stronger and stronger movement, we will find, because we know they're out there, many of us have worked with them already, that there is a solid community of Muslims, both in our country and in the Middle East and in Iraq, who also stand firmly against the extremists in their tradition, as we do in our own, and who will try to insist that all of us will back away from violence and find ways to build true security with one another, which at the end of the day can only happen by building right relationships.
Now, you mentioned an act of repentance, which it strikes me as a significant part of this this witness tomorrow night, Rick. What other, if you can give shape to it, what other facets does something like repentance carry with regard to the war in Iraq? Because repentance is it's not so much, you know, mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, and go do it again. It is an act
right.
of contrition.
That's right. The act of repentance for the Christian, especially during this season of Lent, as we move toward the Easter Sunday morning where we celebrate the resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ, we understand that you can't, too many Christians in our country try to get to the empty cross without the pain and the suffering that Jesus experienced as he was tried and judged and tortured and then hung on a cross in the most unimaginably painful way that was known to his time. You know, you can't rush to the resurrection. You begin with repentance. You begin with an understanding that we have to take responsibility for carrying our own cross in our time, for standing against torture, standing against war and poverty and all of the things that plague our world today, and that it's only in doing that that we eventually begin to move toward what is, at the end of the day, an unbelievably hopeful message, that there can be a different kind of world, and that we can be participants in creating that reign of God, co-creators with God, and making that happen.
Are you at all concerned with what I at least perceive as an institutionalized Christianity that has been used as a flog for the interests that have profited so well from this war?
Of course we are, and that's the primary reason that we're starting with this as an intentionally Christian witness. But I should point out, you know, there's a unfortunate 2,000-year history in which Christians have been up and down, and, you know, we understand, the heart of the Christian tradition understands that we begin as a fallen people, and that it is our task constantly in our lives to try and overcome all of the ways in which we are participants in structures of sin and evil. That's not a head game. It's not just mouthing the words, "I believe in Jesus." It means that we go to work doing the hard work of insisting that that somehow God calls us to something better, and we can help to make that thing happen.
When the war got started, Rick, I heard, and it struck me as a profoundly plastic treatment of the words of Christ. I heard things like, well, Peter owned a sword, so that justifies the war in Iraq. Or I heard, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, being used as a justification for the war. And again, that seems like a roundabout way of getting to it when it's abundantly clear from the Sermon on the Mount and many other places in the words of Jesus that this is unconscionable, and yet it seems like one of the primary failings, if you would call it a failing, is our inability to point that out. Do you see a sea change in that coming or developing?
You know, Bob, I think I should say that I pray for a sea change, perhaps. You know, I see signs of it. I served for 2 years as the moderator of the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church USA. I finished that term in July. That's our highest elected office. And it meant that 3 weeks out of every month for the last 2 years, I was traveling to churches across this country and hearing Presbyterians talk about the things that mattered to them most. And at the end of the day, it's a mixed bag. We are, like most of the rest of the country, a divided people, and we're deeply ambivalent about the war that we've gotten ourselves into. Having said that, there is a growing discontent with the notion that somehow preemptive strike and overwhelming military might can ever lead to genuine security. And there are many, many people, Presbyterians, other Christians, and people across the country who don't profess Christianity, who are beginning to say there's got to be a better way. And it's really just our goal to try and reclaim that. The Christians ought to be leading the way on that conversation, because you're absolutely right that throughout the biblical tradition, if you read story after story, when the people of God have been most afraid, and let's be honest, fear is what we're really talking about here in our country today, when
yes.
they've been most afraid, God has insisted that the answer is to reach out in love and not to turn inward in fear. And it's counterintuitive, it's hard work, and it's the work we are absolutely called to do.
Is there a, I know you say 48 states will be represented in this witness. Is there a greater regional component from one area of the country as opposed to another? I say this because our network originates in West Virginia. As I speak to you, I'm sitting here in Alabama, and there's, you know, there's still a whole lot of what would seem to me as this almost heretical blending of patriotism as a function of faith. Do you see any break coming in that? Or I'm sure you pray for it.
Again, I do pray for it, but I also believe that break is happening. We have strong participation from all over the country in surprising places, and there are busloads of people coming from all over the Midwest and parts of the South, they're from the Northeast. Certainly people who are closer to Washington within a day's drive are going to find it easier to get here. But as people have taken responsibility to sign up on our website to run their own concurrent witnesses, those witnesses have been spread out all over the country. I think there is a sea change that's taking place. You know, I heard that powerful speech that many of your listeners heard by Barack Obama now, what, almost 7 years ago, I believe it was, at the Democratic Convention, and his language at that point about the fact that he was having a hard time distinguishing between red and blue states. I think that's been my experience and many of our experience, that there are folks out there across the country who are deeply ambivalent and very, very concerned about this war, and they want it to end and they want a new set of priorities. And that seems to blur the distinctions between Democratic and Republican.
If, in fact, one has engaged in a meaningful act of repentance where this war is concerned, Rick, and one goes into one's congregation and one hears I'm almost ashamed to even talk about it within the context of a faith community or a church community, but one hears that strident beating of the drum of war and the waving of the bloody shirt. Do you have any recommendations or help for how one deals with that as a member of a congregation if it's coming out of the pulpit?
We have our work to do in our own congregations, and I'm not asking or suggesting that anyone shirk that responsibility. We have to begin to find our voice, and it's going to take moral courage to do so. But having said that, you cannot do this work alone. You need to be surrounded by people in community who understand where you're coming from and who appreciate the same things you appreciate about what it means to be called to be a follower of Jesus. And I would say that this is a perfect opportunity to type in your zip code and go find some like-minded folks, so that you get lifted up and you find some strength as you go back into congregations where, unfortunately, it's still all too common for people to equate blind patriotism and the blessing of a war that appears to be leading us deeper and deeper into a morass of violence, instead of standing firmly against that war and insisting that we will be followers of the Prince of Peace.
Well, I am reminded of that verse that says, if my people who are called by my name will, what, cease their wicked ways and seek me, then I will bless them. And I'm paraphrasing. And that is one that is frequently trotted out by the pro-war right, and they're so fond of it. It would seem to me, though, that you're giving real life to that promise, because seeking an end to this and seeking a peace that winds up in some sort of justice for those people whom we have so freely slaughtered over there can't help but be doing God's work. So I thank you so much for what you're doing. I thank Reverend Wallace for what he's doing. And while I will be down here in Alabama, I will be with you in spirit at the very least. And I hope perhaps in coming days, next week perhaps or something, maybe we could have a follow-up on this and an idea of where you're going to go next. Is that within reason?
I would welcome the opportunity at any time to return and have further conversation, Bob. And I'm grateful for your giving us such an important forum in which to talk about this so fully. It's wonderful to have more than the typical 30 seconds for a soundbite.
We loathe those things, Rick. what we do here we call conversation radio, and we really, really mean it. So, again, I know my thoughts and the thoughts of many of the people listening will be with you. Is everything in place to take care of folks after the arrests?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been negotiating carefully with the police so that there are no surprises either to the police or to us. That's the heart of what it means to try and do a careful and thoughtful nonviolent witness, and one that is respectful. And so tomorrow night, I expect that well over 500 people will make that decision to kneel in front of the White House and pray, and they may well be arrested for it, and there will be a continuing support system for them. And I'll encourage your listeners one more time to check out ChristianPeaceWitness.org and look for ways that they can get involved even tomorrow and into the future with us as well.
Rick, thank you very kindly, and our thoughts go with you.
I'm grateful once again. Thank you to you and to Agnes.
Take care.
You too.
Bye now. ChristianPeaceWitness.org. It seems almost obscene to say that what we're marking right now is an anniversary. Anniversaries are happy times. Anniversaries are for marking the commitment of two people who have decided to be together and work together through life, and to laud them and praise them on their accomplishment. An anniversary is a marking of a birth. It's a marking of the number of years that you have labored in honesty and decency and goodness on the behalf of an employer, perhaps, or the number of years you've been in business. And yet we are met with this. God, I'm at a loss for the right kind of language. What would you call this anniversary? Demonic? Is this an anniversary of blood? I don't think there's any but can say that this is an anniversary of our profound and deep and agonizing and lasting utter shame. And that kind of thing is merit. That kind of thing merits what Rick Ufford Chase was talking about. Genuine repentance. And I wish that I had some way of knowing that at some point in time, at about 10 o'clock tomorrow or 10:30 or 11 or whenever it happens tomorrow evening, that maybe George Bush would toddle over to a window in his footy pajamas and have a look at the real face of active, believing Christianity. And I know there are a number of people in the audience here who don't share that faith. But I hope you will be able to, as I do, to look and recognize that these people are definitely, and with great grace and great dedication, that these people are looking to live in a manner consistent with someone who said that love thy neighbor as thyself was the greatest commandment, second only to love God. And to be able to repent for what has been done in their name and to make real efforts toward continuing that repentance in congregation after congregation after congregation after congregation may actually bring change and resolution. Because, as I've long said, I think the right-wingers, the religion industry, Republicans, and so forth, would be far better served to start crying out, God forgive America, than their facile rubric of God bless America. Because if you buy into it, he, she, it is not going to bless anything that is still actively engaged in doing evil and doing wrong. So we're gonna take a break, and we'll come back and wrap up the program, take it the last 15 or 20 minutes toward the end of this My Friday, Your Thursday. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to The Horn, America's liberal voice. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
You, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
There
Hi, I'm Rebecca Herbst. I play Elizabeth Weber on General Hospital. I want you to know about a wonderful nonprofit foundation called the Jesse Cause, saving the babies from Group B strep, also known as beta strep. It's named after little Jesse, who needed 3 brain surgeries, all because his mom was never given a simple test. Group beta strep is the leading infectious killer of newborns in the United States, yet most people have never even heard of it. Amazingly, 1/3 of all pregnant women have beta strep, and it's almost 90% preventable with common antibiotics. Tell your friends about beta strep, and if you're pregnant, ask your doctor to test you. Together, we can save the babies and put an end to this devastating yet preventable bacteria. For more information, call toll-free at 877-HALT-GBS. That's 877-HALT-GBS. Or log on to groupbstrep.com. That's groupbstrep.com. Jesse and I thank you.
I think at this point Agnes is psychically willing me toward West Virginia, and I'm willing myself as well. Thanks for sticking around this evening. Like I said, it's a shortened week. I'm sorry I won't be here tomorrow night, but I'm cheap, and if I don't take the cable box back, it's $100 a month to me to have internet in an empty house, and ain't gonna do that. Sorry. I think back to years and years and years ago when I was in the public school system down here, and I can't remember what grade it was that I first heard compare and contrast thus and so in a paper, but it remains a useful tool, doesn't it? So let's do that. Now, Rick Ufford Chase, just in very plain language and very determined language, described what he hopes to create with this Christian Witness out in Washington, D.C. tomorrow evening. 3.5-mile march of as many as 5,000 people from the National Cathedral to the White House, at which point they will ring the White House. And apparently, by completing the circle in front of the White House gate, that one little space there in front of the gate is apparently constitutes an act of civil disobedience, because you never know when George Bush is going to have to just fly out of the White House. What's an emergency? The Bush light's on, the Bush phone's ringing. So that will constitute an act of civil disobedience, and people will be arrested. They will be fined. They're going to do everything in their power to, as Rick put it, have no surprises for the police and let the police know that they're nonviolent and that they are dedicated to principles of nonviolence. But those people are still putting up their honor. They're honored. You know, you get a little old lady who's never had so much as a jaywalking ticket gets a criminal record for this. So let's compare and contrast between the efforts of Christian Peace Witness and, oh, I don't know. Yeah, okay, here's one. This came to me from one of the right-wing PR flacks. Viacom broadcasts blasphemous TV show Now, bear in mind, little bitty babies are getting blown into their constituent molecular parts and becoming becoming permanently ingrained in the walls of mud huts in Iraq. But that's okay. Because America's pro-life, pro-family mutual fund group, the Timothy Plan, is directing its ire in another direction. The president of the Timothy Plan is Arthur Alley. And instead of being upset about what probably is approaching very fast a million innocent civilian dead in Iraq, well, you know, the Timothy Plan and its president, Arthur Alley, can't be bothered with that. No, 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 they are really, really burned up about the Sarah Silverman program and an episode called Naughty Hottie. That's Naughty Hottie. Now, frankly, I've, you know, kind of cruising across and I'd see the Sarah Silverman show, and, you know, I don't get it. It's, you know, it just doesn't do it for me. I've got different, I suppose, different tastes or different internal paradigms for what makes funny. And she doesn't. That probably makes me a fogey or a geek or some sort of cultural outsider. But nonetheless, I don't think that it calls for protest. Because, you see, the Naughty Hottie episode of the Sarah Silverman program, it's got a scene where she has sex with God. Yes, yes, sex with the Almighty. From the press release. During your talk show interview with Timothy Plan President Arthur Alley, he shares with your audience that to air and rebroadcast a program, comedy or not, that depicts the main character having sex with God brings Viacom's anti-Christian vitriol to an all-time low. Christians and culturally conservative Americans alike should be appalled by the sheer blatancy of this heresy, said Alley. Okay. It's one of those. Let's see if we can get this. Hear this? That's me scratching my pointy little head. Because the last time I checked, this dude had a religion because God had sex with a Jewish girl. So what? The Timothy, this is just, you know, this guy wants to get on the air and complain about Sarah Silverman, but at the same time he wants to make sure he gets a pitch in for his god, Mammon. The Timothy Plan avoids investing in companies that profit from or support things like pornography, abortion, non-married lifestyles, anti-family entertainment, as well as companies involved in promoting issues contrary to the teachings of the Bible. Well, you know, Mr. Alley, like I said, the last time I checked the Bible, it said God got it on with a little Jewish girl there. And your objection to Sarah Silverman is what? And, quote, anyone with any semblance of basic Judeo-Christian value should find this type of programming offensive. Oh, good, he's going to tell me what I should find offensive. You know what I find offensive? I find him offensive. I find profoundly offensive a guy who thinks that he is going to invest his way into the kingdom of God. Missed that whole thing about easier for a rich man to pass, a camel to pass through the eye of a needle for a rich man to get into the kingdom of heaven. Yeah, he missed that one. Well, I didn't really mean a camel. Didn't really mean a real needle. He meant something else. Oh, so that part's not literal? The rest of the time with these freaks, the Bible is literal. That part's not. I would challenge them to consider divesting from Viacom stock, whether they hold it directly or through a mutual fund investment. The Timothy Fund has over $500 million under management. What are you doing with the Timothy Fund there, buddy? Giving it all away to the poor and following Christ? Because, you know, that's the part of the Bible that we hear about before the business about camels and needles and rich men and entering the kingdom of heaven. Give it all away and follow me. That's what he said. But Mr. Alley is going to continue following his God, Mammon. So, at the same time that 5,000 committed, moral, upright practitioners of the Christian faith are going to surround the White House tomorrow, Timothy Plan President Arthur Alley is in a snit about a marginally funny comedy sketch. Okay, so that one didn't compare and contrast so well. It's sort of real Christians, one the fundamentalist religion industry, nothing. Okay, maybe we can do better. Let's see. There's always our buddies at the American Family Association. They're a Christian organization, aren't they? Well, of course they are, because, you know, a Christian organization is supposed to minister to the poor, the sick, the needy. I was in prison and you visited me not, you know, that whole thing. Dear Bob, this is from my buddy Donald Wildmon. Dear Bob, homosexual activists want Marine General Peter Pace forced out of the service because he called sex between two homosexuals immoral. I don't think he ever mentioned the number two. He said it was immoral to be home for, you know, they lie. General Peter Pace said that it was immoral to be homosexual. Just be homosexual. Didn't say anything about anybody having sex. Donald Wildman, you damn liar. Exactly what did General Pace say which upset the homosexual leaders? I believe homosexual acts between two individuals are immoral and that we should not condone immoral acts. Huh. I would not want acceptance of overt homosexual behavior to be our policy. The liberal media is strongly supporting the homosexual efforts. They have already forced him to back down a step. And read what the Human Rights Campaign says. Human rights, that must mean they're secular humanists. Take action, Bob. Send an email to President Bush, who is the commander-in-chief of our armed forces. God, with these idiots, you have to remind them that he's commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Ask President Bush to praise General Pace for upholding military law. Seem to recall something out there. Wait. By the way, once I've done everything that Brother Wildmon wants me to do, if you think our efforts are worthy, would you please support us with a small gift? I was thinking of sending them a little soap on a rope. Thank you for caring enough to get involved. I wonder if Brother Wildmon ever realizes how hot hell is going to be for him. Holy cats. All right, one more try. Okay, so far it's real followers of Jesus, 2, religion, industry, nothing. Dear Bob, well, it looks like we got our hopes up only to have Ford knock them down. Last week, we reported that we could not find Ford advertisements in the homosexual magazines or events. We spoke too soon. Immediately after we released our findings, Ford said it will continue to support homosexual publications. They also turned up as a sponsor of the 2007 Motor City Pride Festival. Of course, Ford shows up as a corporate sponsor of the 2007 Motor City Serbian American Society and the Motor City Polish American Society and the Motor City Black Pride Society and the Motor City the whole bunch of white people society. Detroit! Ford sponsors everything for as long as they got a little bit more money. Ford spokeswoman Kristen Kinley said, "We buy advertising to put Ford's message in front of as many customers as possible and include customers of all walks of life, customers who have a lot of other options given the competitive marketplace. In other words, we're trying to sell some cars here." Every Homer sectional publication and organization Ford supports has their top priority, the legalization of Homer sectional marriage. Really, unit. So, while, okay, I'd say that's, yeah, three strikes and you're out, religion industry. So while Rick Ufford Chase and Jim Wallace and thousands of committed others who actually try to follow the teachings of Christ are doing so, taking up their cross and following him, the religion industry continues to march blindly on, concerned about how two people have sex, or who buys a car, or what car they buy, and whether or not the people building those cars are able to make the house payment next month, and trying to make sure that they can't. Could it be any clearer? That's it, everybody. Thanks again for a wonderful night, your contributions in many ways. I appreciate your emails, your phone calls, your kind thoughts. And I'll work on the screaming. Not making fun of anybody. I'll just work on the screaming. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes, from whom I will not be separate for much longer, I hope. God willing, as the saying goes. It was engineered by John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programming on the Horn. Got a fundraiser going on. Do the right thing. Do the right thing by Guy James. Go to his website, theguyjamesshow.com. I do believe there's an instruction for how to donate. Become part of Billy Shears' 60 supporters. You'll enjoy it. You'll have a cool thing out of it. Many thanks to the moderators in the Head On Radio Network chat room. ELO, Lottie, Peter. Many thanks to Peter, our IT professional, who keeps all the computers behaving. Great thanks indeed to the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters, who get up every day and their thousands of members, and they go and they build the American dream and support this network and help us try to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
You're listening to the Venture 3 Radio Network.
Senate Democrats' budget leaves war funding intact. Senate debates troop withdrawal measure. No apology from General Pace for gay stance. Democrats work to smooth Iraq tension. House approves three open government bills. Hillary Clinton calls for Gonzalez's resignation. Gonzalez rejects calls for his resignation. George Bush upset over flawed attorney firings. Justice's plan for firing seven prosecutors, an email that's released about what really went on. Israel not enthusiastic about strike on Iran, says Olmert. Giuliani will miss firefighters' events. Giuliani law firm lobbies in Texas for Chavez-controlled Citgo. McCain draws heat from vet group and Club for Growth. Calderon condemns border fence. 2008 hopefuls vow better care for vets. Richardson presses oil independence plan. GOP weighs value of California independence. 2008 campaign will test the privacy of candidates' personal lives. These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now.